Hi there, I'm Trevor Loudon, and here you are with the second episode of the Riding the Pine podcast. I'm joined, as always, by Simon Dowgalis, Brett Bone, and Nick Ashbourne. Today's podcast will be brought to you in four quarters with a couple segments that we like to play. First quarter, over at the NBA. Teamwork? Kawhi not. What happens next? What's going on there? Another segment, and then the second quarter we move to the Stanley Cup Finals. All hail the LA Kings. The struggling Rangers and King Henrik are on the brink of absolute sorcery at the hands of the Knights in Black. And in other news, Super Joe to T.O.? In the third quarter, suspensions in the MLB, Manny Machado, temper tantrums, and bench-clearing skirmishes. Is this child's play, or is it just another Manny being Manny? And in the fourth quarter, ay, Brasil, the World Cup, some amateur predictions, and they are amateur. Some questions, and who's the dark horse? But, as I always start, let's go to Mr. Dowgalis and talk about the NBA.
What's going on, guys? So, that game last night, pretty good, eh? The Spurs, that Spurs offense, that first half, that was pretty amazing. I'm assuming everyone enjoyed that. Fat Boris Diaw's passing. I'm hoping that he can be brought up almost every podcast. He was whipping it around all over the place.
Oh, he's killing it.
I'm going to go ahead and say I probably don't agree with Van Gundy's call last night where he was saying that youth coaches should be playing constant loops of the Spurs offense and only that. Probably want to diversify a bit, but I do get his baseline point, which was that offense was just humming along. That was gorgeous.
I think that kids should participate in real drills where they're actually handling the ball as opposed to a 100% video way of learning, but that's just me.
He did make it sound like his game plan was just for the kids to watch that loop forever, which is probably a bit of a stretch. Anyway, I think there were some important things to take away from the game. You could obviously talk about the stars. You could talk about Timmy D, you could talk about LeBron, but I think a lot of the things that I took away from the game was some important notes on kind of more role players. As Scoops' awesome pun to start the show mentioned, Kawhi Leonard's got to be talked about. Shot 10 for 13, 29 points last night after 18 combined in the first two games. And I think that in a lot of ways, the Spurs in this series are going to go as far as, maybe not as far as Kawhi takes them, but he's going to be a really important player here. Last finals, he was averaging 14.5 points, over 11 boards. His boards have been way down, but he really needs to be a secondary scorer for them. He can't be putting up the 9-point games that he was in the first couple. And especially with the way that they're playing, Tim Duncan has been really good in the beginning of games, and they really have kind of struggled late in the game so far. I think a big part of that is, as I mentioned last pod, the Heat have been putting LeBron James on Tony Parker at the end of games, and that really has bogged the Spurs offense down late in the games. Their offense is so predicated on Parker getting into the middle of the key and kind of facilitating from there, and LeBron's just been absolutely shutting him down, not letting him get that penetration. He's so long that he shuts down all those passing lanes. And so I think a player like Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green was great last night too. He's going to be an important part, but I think they're really going to need some contribution from those guys. Their bench, the Spurs bench, which has been great all year and which I talked about again last podcast, hasn't been too good. I mentioned Bellinelli. He hasn't really done too much. And so I think the guys like Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green are going to be super important. It was huge to get that out of Kawhi. That first half was about as perfect as you could get offensively. Obviously, we know the impact he's going to have on defense guarding LeBron for the whole game. But that was one of the big takeaways that I had was this team is going to need some secondary scoring, and I think it's going to have to come from a guy like Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah, what about Kawhi did a really great job of just setting the tone overall in the first quarter. He was aggressive. Popovich said that's what he... That's what he wanted, and that's what he needs from Kawhi. And, he was driving to the bucket. And also, it really makes you look good when you're hitting those threes, right?
Yeah.
And the Spurs, contested, uncontested, it really didn't matter. Everything was going down.
They were seemingly getting whatever they wanted all night. And I totally agree. Kawhi 100% set the tone there. And, Danny Green, weirdly, Danny Green's impact was defensively. I think he ended up with 5 steals.
Yeah, he was.
They were turning the Heat over like crazy, especially in that first half. And you know, you could spend a lot of time talking about Timmy D. You almost know what you're going to get from him. Like, it was a down game last game, but he's going to show up. And this series, for the Spurs' point of view, is really going to swing on some of those guys that you wouldn't necessarily expect to show up big in the box score.
What about, speaking of support, how about some support for LeBron? Where's that not-so-Super Mario?
Yeah, and this is the other takeaway that I was thinking of. Mario Chalmers, I was looking up some of the stats. Chalmers last year in their four wins in the finals averaged just under 15 points a game, shot 21 of 42, so that's a pretty easy calculation. That's 50%. And meanwhile, this year, in the three games combined, he's scored 10 points. He's turned the ball over 9 times in the three games. He was 0 for 5 last night. He shot 25% so far in the series. He's just been terrible. Like, he's just been awful. And obviously the Heat are going to, you know, LeBron is a huge part of what the Heat do. But again, almost like Tim Duncan, you know you're going to get great games out of him. You know, last night he turned it over, I think, 7 times. LeBron did. That's way too many. But if you're getting nothing out of your starting point guard, it's not good. And I think Spoelstra's almost at that point where he might have to cut bait. He might have to start Norris Cole. He might have to give him those minutes, because if you're averaging, you know, 3 points a game, just over 3 points a game, and turning it over, you know, 3 times a game, you can't play that guy 30 minutes, 25 ratio. Minutes.
And the numbers you had there, those tell a great story. The difference is night and day in Chalmers in these finals. But just watching that game, he looked like a bad player. Like, he literally just looked like a player who had terrible decision-making and terrible execution. And there were times when it was bordering on comical, some of the things he was doing on the court.
Well, and it was weird. I mean, he's known as a guy who can, you know, he's never going to be a huge scorer, you know, granted. But he's known as a guy who can hit those open threes. And last night, you know, he'd get an open look in the corner, and you're watching and just thinking, well, that's not going to go in. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what's going on, and who knows if it's a confidence thing or whatever, but you see him out there and you assume that it's going to be a negative play. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how bad it's gotten for old Mario.
And that's, you know, last year in the finals, that's the exact opposite of what the Heat were getting from guys like Chalmers, right?
Yeah.
They had guys like Chalmers, Battier, Mike Miller. You know, they were hitting those open threes, you know. And a lot of times last night, Chalmers had a chance, like you said, open threes to, you know, borderline, you know, put a turning point in the game, you know, to cut the lead from 11 to 8 or, you know, or whatever
it was. Yeah, when they were making that run.
You know,
if
he makes those shots, you know, momentum, it becomes a little more. Like, who knows, right? I mean, it's an easy thing to say, but...
Yeah, and I was dumping on Rashard Lewis last edition of the old Riding the Pine pod, and
he made some shots.
Made some shots. Yeah. He's been.
Love his release.
He's been capable. You love his
release. Oh, yeah. What do you mean?
It's because it's unique. It's weird.
Yeah, but so Sean Marion's. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and so it's not Purix.
But he's actually been a useful player. He's been hitting big shots and. I don't know, when you've got just such an obvious kind of net negative as Chalmers is when he's in the game, I mean, he's putting Spoelstra in a real tough position, because it's almost at that point where you just got to get him out.
Yeah.
One of the things that stood out to me last night is both James and Wade had 22 points, mm-hmm. and they both seem like a quiet-ish 22 points, partly because of all those turnovers. But you've got two guys on their team who are getting over 20 points, and it's not enough because the supporting cast just isn't there. So that puts a lot of pressure on Wade and on James. These guys have got to put up huge numbers just to compete, and they can. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the Heat are out of the series or they're necessarily going to lose the series, but these guys have to be absolutely on point for them to score enough to keep up with the Spurs.
That's the thing. I mean, they're essentially... The bench and the role players have been so bad that they're making the margin of error for guys like Wade and LeBron like zero. Like, they have to be stellar for the Heat to win. And that's just, I don't think you can really do that, especially against a great team like the Spurs. You know, Wade was not great in game one and two, and they still were able to squeak out game two. But that's also because LeBron was unbelievable in game two. So, like, they're essentially putting these two stars in a position where either one has to be otherworldly or they both have to be really good. Like, you're going to have to get great production out of the two of them combined. And that's just playing with fire. That's a really dangerous way to do it. LeBron's been carrying this team all season. I mean, Wade's been taking games off throughout the regular season. So LeBron's been putting the team on his back the entire year, but you know, you can't say fatigue's kicking in or anything like that, but it's not a recipe to win another championship.
Mm-hmm. Until that point, it was funny last night. I remember hearing on the broadcast Tony Parker, who is the Spurs' leading scorer by average, you know, going into the game last night. His first 2 points came in the second quarter, mm-hmm. when the Spurs were already up double digits. Mm-hmm. When would you ever see a player on the Heat getting, you know, LeBron or Wade getting their first 2 points of the game, yet they would be up by double digits? You know, it's kind of something that the Spurs can do due to the guys like Kawhi and, you know, Ginobili coming off the bench, you know, Danny Green. Yeah. Like, they just have that depth, right? And that's nothing new. I mean, we knew that before, you know, but, you know, last night, you know, just hearing that, it was like, wow.
Totally.
Like,
that would never happen. You know? That would never happen for the Heat. And I know the big change for the Spurs last night was they put Fat Boris Diaw in the starting lineup. By the way, I'm just going to refer to him as Fat Boris Diaw the entire time, so get used to that. But
he's playing so well.
He's playing great. And I was about to say, like, that was a great move for two reasons. First off, you know, he just swings the ball around so well. He finds guys on passes that, you know, I'm watching from, like, you know, the camera up top, and I don't even see these passing lanes. Like, I have no idea how he was getting some of those passes out. But it also allowed them to take Tiago Splitter off the bench, which is great. They can, you know, sub Splitter for Duncan, still have size. Like, obviously, Splitter's not as good as Duncan, but he's still a big body who the Heat obviously have trouble with big guys. Splitter himself is a good passer, and I think that the move of putting Diaw into the starting lineup could be a huge boon for the for the Spurs this series.
It's gotten to the point with Diaw where I see him driving to the hoop and I just don't believe it. Like, if I'm a defender, I'm not even protecting
gonna
the
contest.
Shot.
Yeah, no.
Because he gets out great pass, unbelievable passes. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, you feel like they're going to adjust because he never puts it up.
You would like to see him shoot a little more. There was that one he had a sick crossover, got right into the middle of the lane, and then just totally airballed it, and there was a shot clock violation. But then later in the game, they ran an ISO post-up for him on
nice
Bosch,
shot.
And he hit a little fadeaway.
Yeah.
So I don't really know what to think. Like, he's great at those open corner threes. He hit one of those, I think, in the fourth. He's great at that. You would like to see him put up some more shots at the rim, but I mean, look, that's nitpicking. You can't really complain about the way Fat Boris Diaw is playing right now.
Yeah, I don't know what I want to know what diet plan he's on.
Yeah,
whatever's doing
good.
What is that guy?
A lot of rib.
A pro athlete who just gets to eat as much McDonald's as he wants.
Yeah. Oh, dirty runs.
Living the life.
Donnie's.
So going forward, I mean, looking at the series going forward, you know, it's still a complete toss-up. I think anyone who tries to tell you that they've got a solid hold on this series after three games would be totally lying. It's still a total toss-up, but I guess there are more red flags on Miami's side than on the Spurs side. That's kind of what I'm thinking going forward. I'm expecting the Heat to win Game 4, and I'm expecting the series to go long, but there are some worrying trends going on for Spoelstra and the boys.
What do you think happens, like, after this season for both teams? Because you've talked so much about, like, the secondary to both teams. And, I mean, do you think that the Spurs, after this whole Parker-Duncan legacy moves on, mm-hmm. are those secondary players able to become star players on a team that's been so dominant?
Yeah, right. That's a good question. The big one will be whenever Timmy retires. Parker's a little younger, and but when Timmy retires, that's a big gap in the middle. Splitter, as I said, isn't nearly as good as Duncan. He's a good player. The good thing is that with guys like Kawhi, I mean, he's, I think, 22 years old, and I've been a big fan of his for a long time. I think he can be probably maybe saying a special player is a stretch, but I think he can be an all-star. He's a great defender, and when he's hitting his shots,
yeah, he's hot.
He does
what he did last night.
Exactly. He's a great player. Miami is going to be a really interesting team to watch going forward, obviously, with the whole contract thing, you know, for LeBron especially. The general consensus is that he's going to pick up his option for next year and then become a free agent the year after that. And, you know, if Wade isn't in a position where he can contribute for a full season, like, I don't think LeBron will want to do multiple seasons where everything is on him. You know what I mean? He's
Cleveland
a great player. He's the best player in the league, but he needs some help. Mm-hmm. Bosch, as I said, again, last pod and watch after watching last game, Bosch is he's really hit or miss. He has his good games aren't great games, and then he also lays some duds. So he's kind of floating into that almost role player territory. And then the rest of the bench is just not good. Yeah. I actually like Norris Cole. You know, I think he's a decent player. Mario, as we let off, Mario has just been atrocious. Mm-hmm. So that's got to be worrying for the whole makeup of the team. It's essentially LeBron, a declining Wade, a Bosch who isn't as good as he was a couple years ago, seemingly. And then a lot of question marks other than that. So, I mean, I think both teams have their own kind of hurdles to jump. But obviously, you've got to give the benefit of the doubt to the Spurs. Like, they keep finding players. Like, even Patty Mills, you know, he was a second-round pick of Portland years ago. He wasn't doing anything. And then all of a sudden, he's, you know, contributing in playoff games. And I got a lot of faith that they'll be able to retool. Duncan's obviously going to be a big miss. But, man, that long-term future of the Heat is kind of scary right now.
Yeah, and when Timmy D retires, he can just become a coach like everybody else these days.
Yeah, wow.
Moving on, we got some fun power rankings.
Power rankings.
There we go.
That did sound like the last one. Yeah, you know what? It is consistent.
I promise. I practice in front of the mirror.
Good. So last week it was a big hit, so we got another power rankings for you guys. Today's power ranking will be about household chores. And we got five of them, as we do. And the five are laundry, bathroom cleaning, cleaning the dishes, vacuuming, and taking out the garbage. So why don't we start with...
None of those are enjoyable, by the way.
None of them are a party. But I say we start with the guy who's pretty much had the most unpopular opinion so far in everything in the Riding the Pine podcast. Let's go with Mr. Bone.
I've taken a lot of heat the past week for my cheese power rankings. And, you know, I just want to explain myself. It was, you know, I was put on the spot. I'm not going to defend the validity of the rankings. There were some things that could have been changed. But, you know, I'm just ready to move on. I hope you guys are. And let's get the show on the road.
Let's turn that
page. How does the ranking system... Is the first one I'm saying the least enjoyable or the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the one I hate the most.
Hate the most is your number five.
Okay. It's laundry. I just did it yesterday. It's really it's really fresh in my mind.
Deja vu all over again.
I just hate it, and I'll defend that to the death. I hate laundry. Okay. Number two is dishes. Number four, is dishes. It's just... It's a constant thing. Every night you're doing the dishes, and it's just a grind. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, if I could pay somebody to do my dishes, I honestly would.
How much?
I mean, not a lot. maybe like a toonie. Or
I'll think about it. A
couple quarters. Right in the middle, I put cleaning the bathroom. I don't really do it that often, to be honest with you. it's not a common occurrence, but it's not fun. It's not fun, but there are worse things. You know, taking out the garbage, number two, I honestly don't mind taking out the garbage. It's quick, you know, unless it really stanks, which for me at least, it doesn't too often. It's, you know, whatever. It's not that bad.
Okay.
And then the one I least mind is vacuuming. You know, sometimes I think it's kind of fun. You know, you're vacuuming. You know, you see the pattern that you just, you know, put the vacuum on. And it looks kind of cool. You hear how much it's picking up. Like, oh, like that was good. Like, ooh, it just picked up a lot of crap on the ground there. So yeah, that's my rankings for this week.
Oh right. Man,
let's move on to Nick, who always has something bad to say about what Brett has to
say. Nicky. Lay it on me.
I think that was a fairly appalling list. laundry at the bottom is something I can't abide, as we'll see. So for me, the worst thing is going to be bathroom. Clean up the bathroom. I think this is a problem a lot of men have. Some women, and if so, I'm sorry for them, but are very hairy. And so when you've got the hair, it just gets all over the bathroom, and it's just it's hair you shaved off, your face, hair that came off in the shower, sure. And it's just... It's a grisly scene, yep. And I don't like getting in there.
Grisly scene.
Very literally grisly. number four, I'm going to go with vacuuming. Brett's number one. If you have a large carpeted place, that will take you so long compared to some of these other chores. And also, they're just pushing something around. I don't know. It kind of makes me feel like, I don't know. It doesn't make me feel good. Number three, I've got dishes. Brett's right. It is a grind.
It is a bit of a grind. Especially when you got that stuck on stuff.
Yeah.
If you left the cheese for a couple of days, like a little melted.
Cheese is a killer.
Yeah. But worth it.
Oh, obviously.
As we've discussed on the previous.
Cheese has got enough airtime.
For number two, I have laundry, and I considered putting this number one. I like the smell when you put the laundry in, and also you can kind of use that to get something done. So you put stuff in the laundry, and you're like, okay, 35 minutes, I'll bang out some writing, or I'll read something I need to do. It's a good chunk of time for you to be productive. And I've done some stuff while laundry was in the mix. Laundromats are a little creepy.
Yeah.
And I've spent a lot of time in them. But, you know, the concept of laundry itself, I'm all right with.
Okay.
Number one has got to be taking out the garbage. It's funny. This comes up in sitcoms a lot. Like, oh, she's complaining because I'm not taking out the garbage. Like, why is it a fight? Just pull it out of the bag and walk like three steps.
Yeah,
and
it sort isn't the hardest, bar. I guess. Sure.
It's not a big deal. And you know what? It's a little bit of a workout, too. So it's all good.
We're just wrestling that garbage out.
Wrestling garbage.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to agree with you on the bottom there with the bathroom cleaning. It's just, you know, it's just a place you don't want to go. Other people have been there. Strangers have been to your house.
It's
who knows
gross.
What they've done? Like, crunches. What's that all about? So I'm going to keep it on the bottom. It's just, it's a dirty place. It's meant to be private. And, you know, when you have to go in, you kind of get a little public with everybody else that's been in there. Number four, I'm going with dishes. Just a grind. I can't stand them. Don't like them. Even if you have a dishwasher, you still have to clean dishes before you put them in as to not screw up your dishwasher.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, come on. That's too much work. I have a machine to do it, and I still have to do something. and then vacuuming is in the, like smack dab in the middle. Vacuuming, as Brett said, you get to see your little path. You know, you get to make a little game out of it.
It's fun.
You can play some X's and O's if you want. Yeah. or if you want, you can, you know, get a little Roomba and have him do all the work
for
you.
See, I'd be down if I had a Roomba.
I was really debating between the top two, and they pretty much are interchangeable. Garbage, as we've said twice now, it's just so easy. I mean, unless you have broken glass in there. I have worked in restaurants where I've had to take out the garbage. That's a different story.
You know I've been in there in that situation too, and yikes.
Yeah, so that's the only reason I put it below laundry. Laundry smells good. Yeah, it's a bit of a pain, but you know, you get some hobbies done in the middle of it. Even if you're at the laundromat, you know, strike up a conversation.
I can't
meet a nice
this.
Young lady.
can't believe this.
All right, let's move on to Douglas.
All right, so here's my list, and man, this is exciting. number five, worst one, bathroom. It's just straight up gross. It's gross.
It's
what are
gross.
You guys doing in your bathroom?
It's like,
I don't.
You know, you got like shaving hair places. You got to clean the toilet and stuff, and just the toilet's gross.
Yeah,
obviously.
I don't like toilets.
Anyway, so the bathroom's gross. Number four for me is vacuuming. I do not enjoy it, and this is mainly a thing. You know, I got a really bad back. I like to call it tall guy back. I'm just a tall guy. And
for those of you at home, Simon Doug's a fairly tall man. Over 6'4",
yep.
In fact.
Yep. So vacuuming for me, like, I don't have a vacuum that really fits my dimensions. So I'm always, like, bending, like, crouched over, like, really trying to dig in the corners. It ends up just, like, kind of hurting my back, and I don't like it. For me, number three is garbage. I totally get what you're saying. I know. I totally get what you're saying about it's not much work. I do live on the third floor of my building with, you know, it's no elevator, so I'm walking downstairs with garbage. That's kind of bad.
Old man Douglas and his bad back.
Yeah, I know. old rickety old Douglas. number two for me is dishes. This is not going to be a popular one, but what I like to do, toss in the old earbuds, toss on a little podcast, maybe toss on a little Riding the Pine plug, and just kind of wash away. It's not so bad. I totally, like, I do get, you know, stuck on stuff's really bad, but if you got something to listen to, it's not the worst. And number one for me is laundry.
So down goes Brett.
I feel great about my list. I have no regrets.
As long as you're confident, man. I do find it pretty funny that once again, like, the bottom of yours is near the top of everyone else's. But, like, here's the thing. You seem way more happy with your list than last time.
Yeah,
and that's a big step.
No regrets.
That's a big step.
Yeah, he's not letting us bludgeon him into the ground this time, which in my opinion makes it less fun, but you know, you could argue it's good for his self-esteem and whatnot.
Stand strong, Bone.
God knows I need that.
Stand strong, buddy.
So, buddy, second quarter, let's have you start it off. The LA Kings up 3-0 on the Rangers. That's far off from what we were all expecting last week.
I picked the Rangers just so everyone remembers that one.
What's what's really going wrong and what's going right?
You know, I honestly feel really bad for the Rangers. Not so much about game 3, but you know, I really think it came down to game 1 and 2 for them in this series. Obviously, the series isn't over yet. They can still, you know, have their, you know, Broadway miracle or Hollywood comeback, whatever you want to call it. But I don't see it happening. I don't know who does. But they needed one of those games in L.A. Two-goal leads in both of them on the road. Game 2, two-goal lead in the third period. And I don't blame Lundqvist for, you know, most of the things that have happened, most of the goals that have been in. On both overtime goals, overtime game 1, you know, Justin Williams, great shot.
There was nothing
turnover inside the blue line. Nothing you can do about that. Game 2, shots going wide by Willie Mitchell. Dustin Brown tips it in. No chance again. And then game 3, all 3 goals. I don't think you can blame Lundqvist for any of them.
So it's interesting you brought this up, because I know I showed you this, the headline of the front page yesterday. It was on sportsillustrated.com yesterday, and pulled up the main page, and the first story was an article on the Stanley Cup, and it was saying that Lundqvist has been disappointing and is one of the biggest reasons the Rangers are down 3-0. And I know you immediately were kind of against that.
Yeah,
so.
And I can't agree with that at all, because like I said, you know, even take away, you know, the first 3 periods in both games, it's overtime, right? Next goal wins. Mm-hmm. You know, what can Lundqvist do in game 1 and 2 to stop those pucks? And in game 3, it could have been 1-0. It could have been 1-0 for the Kings, right? They didn't score any goals. And you know, the way I see it, you know, what the Kings are doing right, what the Rangers aren't, it's just a team, you know, it's a cliche, it's just another team knowing how to win, just being the more clutch team, you know? All the big plays by players, it's been done by the Kings, you know? In game 3, the Rangers outshot the Kings 32-15. They outplayed the Kings.
Yeah.
But, you know, Jonathan Quick, 2 amazing paddle saves. What can you do about that?
Great,
you know, what can you do about that?
So that's what I was wanted to say. I'm glad you brought up that Game 3 shot differential. When you're outshooting your opponents 32-15 and you end up losing that game, some of that's got to be pinned on your goalie, is it not? Because Quick played better than Lundqvist in that game. He had twice as many shots, gave up no goals. Lundqvist gave up 3 goals and 15 shots. I'm not saying that they're easy goals or anything, but I think that when something like that happens, it's understandable that the finger gets pointed at Lundqvist a little bit.
You know, I would agree, but, you know, like I said, literally going over how each of the goals went in, it was like the third goal, Mike Richards, an obvious backbreaker, right, you know, right before they're going to the second intermission. They could have went into the third down 2-0. Not a good situation, but, you know, 3-0, you might as well pack your bags.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, pass on a 2-on-1. McDonough makes a great play to block the pass, and it goes right back to Richards' tape, and he puts it in. The second goal, it's on the it was on the power play, but Marty St. Louis gets on his knees to try and block the shot, ends up totally redirecting the puck, you know, from one side of the net to the other, while Jeff Carter's standing in front of Lundqvist. He can't see a thing. So how can you blame him for that? And then the first goal in the game, I'm drawing a blank here.
That was the one with, like, 0.7 seconds left or whatever?
And Dan Girardi, you know, slides across to try to block the shot. The Rangers, their heads are in the right place. I mean, they're trying to do
getting
the right
down,
things, right?
Block,
you don't not want to block a shot. Mm-hmm. But, you know, tough break, like off his skate, top, you know, top shelf on Lundqvist, he gets a piece, but
just 3 really bad bounces.
But, you know, to next point, yes, like absolutely Jonathan Quick outplayed Henrik Lundqvist.
No doubt.
And, you know, a saying that I say a lot that, you know, you guys find funny, Quick just doing what Quick does.
That's just what he does.
That's just what he does, you know. This, you know, more so 2 years ago than this year, but when the Kings have needed a save, Jonathan Quick is there. He makes that save. He's proved it time and time again. And, you know I said Kings in 7 on our last podcast, but, you know, I told Simon this the other day. If the Kings get game 3, it's going to be a sweep. And I'm sticking to that. What do the Rangers have? I don't know where they can pick up, you know, they could pick up positives, but I just don't see them I think they're done at this point. I mean, no easier way to say it.
Yeah. If we can't point fingers at Lundqvist, where should we start pointing our fingers at? What are some holes in that offense?
You know, everyone's been talking about him, and deservedly so. Rick Nash, 3 goals in 23 games. He leads the Rangers with 80 shots in the playoffs. That shooting percentage works out to 3.8%. That's not a sustainable stat, but it shows that, as much as people want to say Nash isn't creating, Nash is getting his chances. He's putting pucks on net, but he's not finding the back of the net, and that's all that it really comes down to, right? And, it doesn't matter how many shots he put on net. They got to go in at the end of the day. So Nash is obviously an easy one to, point at. The money he's making, the impact that they thought Nash would make when he came over hasn't been, what they thought it would be. Also, to shoulder some of that blame, Brad Richards, won the Conn Smythe with Tampa Bay when they won it all. He's, proven playoff performer, guy that comes through in the clutch. Well, he hasn't been doing that. He's pointless in the last 5 games, including the 3 Stanley Cup final games, and he's a -6. So he's not doing his part. It's actually the role players on the Rangers that are, producing the most right now. The guys like Kreider and Zuccarello, and that can't last forever. The big boys got to step up. St. Louis, he's got one point in the finals, a goal. He's a -4. It's just not enough. It's just not enough. So those are 3 guys that they make a lot of quiche,
mm-hmm.
and they're not earning it, so to speak, on the ice thus far. Right? Things could change. Who knows? Maybe, maybe each of them has a multi-point game tonight or something like that. Mm-hmm. But to this point, I think you got to look at those guys as the big disappointments.
So with a loss tonight, what do you see happening to those 3 guys in particular at the end of the season?
I want to talk about Brad Richards mostly here. Nash, Nash, he just got there. He's staying put. His age isn't a factor. He could easily have a bounce back year next year. He's obviously an above average hockey player. But Brad Richards, he turns 35 next year. If you can believe this, I looked this up today. I thought this was, ludicrous to see this. His cap hit is $6.6 million over the next 6 years.
Oh,
so brutal. if he's still in the league when he's 41, he won't be making $6 million a year. That's just the cap hit. But whatever team has him, $6.6 million, which leads me to the point that the Rangers have 1 compliance buyout, 1 non-compliance buyout left. And I can't see a scenario that they're not using it on Brad Richards this summer.
Mm-hmm.
He's declining. Like, the Rangers have, some pretty good prospects. They have JT Miller, who's a center in their system right now. He could come up and take some of that ice time. Like I said, Kreider, Hagelin, some young guys. But and I don't even know. It was kind of with LeCavalier, big contract with Tampa Bay, but they saw that was a mistake, that he was declining, he's getting older, and he is not worth that money. So they bought him out, and then Philly, did another contract with him for a lot less money. So I see a similar thing happening to Brad Richards this summer. Somebody will obviously take him, but not at $6.6 million a year.
Yikes.
That's for sure.
That is a staggering number.
In other news, maybe another old guy kind of coming out of the Southwest, Super Joe Thornton is apparently the Leafs are interested
Jumbo
Joe Thornton.
Joe.
And, I know my opinion and Nick's opinion. What's your opinion on that, Brett?
Well, we're going to get to your guys' opinion in a sec here.
Torontonian.
Yeah, I'm going to be quick with this. Thornton's 35. He's got 3 years on the contract that he just got signed to months ago with San Jose at almost 7 per. Toronto's problem isn't scoring goals in offense. Their problem is defensively. They don't have a lot of good two-way forwards. Hell, they don't have a lot of good two-way defensemen. They don't have a lot of good defensive defensemen, for that matter.
That's not what they need.
And for the assets to get Thornton, I don't even know what they would throw together. I mean, draft picks are obviously the obvious option, but I would think it'd be something like Kadri. And maybe another role player in a first round pick or something like that.
Blah.
Do you want to part with an emerging, low 20 year old center and a potential first round draft pick and another player for a guy, once again, that's 35, he's on his last legs in the league. Obviously, he can still be productive, and he still is producing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a win-now kind of move.
That's a
win-now kind of move, getting Thornton. And this is the talk last year.
But
the Leafs aren't ready
Leafs
to
do.
Win now. They're
that's
to
how we win.
Right now. Now's the time to win.
They're trying to mask. That would be a masking move to say that they're ready to win now, and they're just not.
Can we get any like quick headlines if Super Joe came to Toronto? Any quick ones? Ooh. Super Joe and the big T.O.?
Okay.
Okay.
You know what? Like, you're the one with the mind.
Yeah.
I mean, you're asking the wrong guy. Yeah.
I'll give you part marks on the Super Joe NTO.
Okay.
That works.
I'm violently against puns. So, like, I'm just never going to work for
Scoops
the Toronto Sun.
Scoops makes it work, though. Scoops
so, what about the two Leafs fans in the
yeah,
room?
Yeah.
Like,
let's
what
hear
about
from you
the Toronto natives and Leafs fans? Scoops and Nick, what do you think of
no
it,
way.
The whole rumor?
No way. Don't get them.
Not in a million years. It's
resounding.
It's very obvious reasons. Like, he doesn't fit. Like Brett said, the team needs defensive players. Also, the idea would be to play him with Kessel. Be like, wow, what a great playmaker and what a great scorer. Kessel scores on the rush. Joe Thornton isn't on any rushes. He's too slow. Like, it wouldn't make any sense. It's like, on the power play, it would be good. That's the only time it would be good.
Yeah. And they didn't even have a bad power play last
power
year, right?
Line. But you know what? Just sell out for all offense. Get Joe Thornton. Get Patrick Marleau, too.
Give just up run
all,
and gun.
All
just
the draft picks and just play in games where the over-under is like 8 or 9.
Be the Washington Capitals of like, you know, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? Outscore your opponents. That worked real good for them.
So, Scoops, you're also against it, though?
Yes, I am. Obvious. Well, every reason's already been said by these last two guys. But, I mean, I think more for me, the thing that I wouldn't be able to take is all my friends buying into it.
Sure.
When once it happens, as Leaf fans
a lot
do
of my
it.
Buddies oh, would God. Show up with Thornton jerseys.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The sales would go through the roof. And he's a perfect fit for our team. And it'll just be, oh, man, I can't stand that as a Toronto fan.
It'd be funny.
Leafs
be
fans
funny.
Are notoriously quick, on the trigger finger when it comes to the Kool-Aid. Like, they're reaching for that Kool-Aid right away. They should know better. Given the history, they should really know better.
Well, our listeners learned last year about the Douglas, and here's another one. I say they should get them. No facts behind it, but let's go Leafs.
Those
go get
our, our listeners last year.
Is that what I said?
Yes.
I meant last episode. You know, whatever.
Moving on. Away from hockey, we have a new segment for you. New segment.
And, we're really waiting on that sound.
This is called the Honest Press Conference, and this is where one of us, a panel member, in this case it's going to be we'll let you find that out. Is assigned a role, i.e. a coach or an athlete, while the other panel members take the role of reporters and ask them questions. Instead of giving generic, cliche-filled answers, the guy playing the role of the sports celebrity must give answers that the celebrity really feels or thinks. So in this first episode of the Honest Press Conference, we actually have Kevin Seitzer in studio.
Blue Jays hitting coach. Kevin Seitzer, how are you?
Hey, I really appreciate you guys having me over. I heard that your last podcast had close to 100 views, so it's great to get some exposure.
International. So let me start it off, Kevin. The Jays are red hot in May and even in early June. As of late, something's changed. What's going on? Do fans need to worry?
You know what? That's a great question. First of all, just congrats on a fantastic question. See, here's the thing. Most of these hitters on the Blue Jays are like 30 plus, and like I don't know, they kind of already have learned to hit. There's not much more that I can really tell them. Like, they've been in the big leagues for a while. You know, give me a team of 8-year-old kids and wow, I'll bring them up. Like, I will get these guys hitting way better than before. But when you're talking about fully formed baseball players, you know what? What can I really do to help?
So when Pat Tabler and Buck Martinez keep telling me that you are, like, the biggest impact on the Jays bats, you're saying you don't necessarily have
that big
impact.
You're saying that no hitting coaches do anything?
Well, you know what? I'm happy to get the attention. Like, I know my mom watching at home likes to see my face on the screen.
For
and
sure.
There's been a lot
Mama
of just...
Mama Seitzer?
Oh, Mama Seitzer. That lasagna. Unbelievable. So I'm happy to get a little exposure. You know, maybe it'll help me if I write a book later, something like that. People kind of know my name because they're like, oh, hey, that's the guy that Buck Martinez always talked about. So I'm never going to disparage people who want to give me credit. But at the same time, I think it would be dishonest for me to just take too much of it.
A lot of people want to talk about Mr. Encarnacion. Edwin, who was hotter than holy hell in May.
Holy hell?
Holy hell. He now has 2 home runs in June to this point. What up? What up with that?
The thing about... Well, first of all, great question.
Thank you.
But secondly, you know, the thing about that is a guy is going to hit sort of 16 home runs in a month. That's just not going to happen all the time. I would love if it did. I would definitely get a manager job somewhere if he just kept hitting.
That book would be a bestseller.
Oh, like the book, the manager job, like maybe with a team in a big baseball market too, like a place that cared a little bit more than Toronto. Like we're all trying to work on our careers here. So Edwin's really letting me down because if we were hitting a little better and sustaining that sort of superhuman run, then I would be getting a lot of accolades for that.
How much do you take credit for his surge in May?
I'd like to take all the credit, so on the record, 100%. Okay. But just between me and you, 4.
That's not much. I'd like to ask about another player, interesting to me. That's Anthony Gose. You got a lot of power hitters on the team, and then you've got Anthony Gose, who's not that. So what's it like, you know, trying to coach up a guy who's all about bunting, who has zero power to speak of? You know, what's going on there?
See, here's the thing about Anthony Gose. People have said before that hitting a baseball is sort of the hardest thing to do in sports, and Gose definitely makes it look like it is. this is a guy who is just kind of incapable of hitting a baseball. So we said, you know, let's take a different approach. Instead of swinging, just sort of hold on to your bat and just put it in the area, and let's hope it kind of nubs off. And you can use those wheels. It's a lot less work for me because I don't really think there's any technique that goes into bunting, at least not so far as I know. Some of my colleagues might. It's just something I've never really been familiar with. So I just say, you know, put the bat out there and wait and hope.
So not much hope for him getting the ball out of the infield very often then.
You know what? Getting the ball in the infield, like that's what people always talk about as if it's this big thing. But just, you know what? Get on base. And if it's going to be through pure luck and speed, God bless you.
That was Kevin Seitzer, hitting coach for the Blue Jays, with some questionable opinions about
his... It's a pleasure to meet him, though.
Yeah, it was. He's a really nice, unique guy and takes all the credit on the record, but none off the record.
I think it was interesting that he couldn't distinguish between the two within sort of 5 seconds. He assumed that suddenly he was off the record as if the recording machine was off. That was a strange...
Yeah, I can't really distinguish between the two of you, actually.
Weird.
All right, funnily enough,
that successful.
We're moving on to the third quarter. And in baseball, let's look at old Manny Machado. On June 8, 2014, he twice struck Athletics catcher Derek Norris with his bat during a follow-through. Norris was taken out of the game as a result, and Machado then threw his bat in the 8th inning because of Fernando Abad's inside pitching. Kind of threw a hissy fit. What's going on with that, Nick?
Yeah, I think sort of the first thing to remember about Machado is that this is a guy who's still 21 years old, and that's not to excuse anything he did because it's pretty horrifying. I'm going to kind of get to that a little later. But when this happens and it's a kid who's this age, that makes a little more sense to me. Something who, it's easier to see them get frustrated and let their emotions get the best of them. One thing that I think is a little bit important to the story too, and again, I'm trying to bring context here without condoning what he's done, but Abad was, it looks like, throwing at his knee, which was recently surgically repaired.
Yeah.
So that move in and of itself is a pretty awful one.
And players in general don't really like getting thrown at their legs. I mean, that's pretty tough. Like, you can take one, if you can turn into it with your back or, you know, something like that.
The old rear end is a good spot for a ball.
That's better than just taking one straight in the legs.
Yeah, and so he throws this bat here. I think it's more of a careless move, like a negligent move than a violent move. Like, yeah, he threw his bat. Did he really want or expect to hit the third baseman? I don't think so. That being said, he did throw his bat into the field of play. His bat is a massive wooden thing that when going at high speeds can cause a lot of damage. So it's monumentally stupid to do something like that.
True.
I'm not sure if it's quite as vicious as some people maybe have painted it. But I don't know. You guys saw the play. Like, how did that strike you?
I just think it really couldn't have been more obvious.
Yeah, it was on purpose.
Did it. Like, it was, you
for
know,
sure.
It was obviously obvious. Mm. I personally don't think that 5 games is enough. Like, I don't think that's enough.
What do you think that speaks to, like, the suspension, you know, talk in general in the MLB?
I was going to say that in baseball, I think it's at a pretty laughable stage right now. And the problem is it's hard to move it ahead because these type of situations, they like to go on precedent. Mm-hmm. But the precedent is way too lenient in my opinion. So just a couple of pretty horrible incidents in recent years. 2010, there's a bench-clearing brawl with the Reds, and Johnny Cueto kicks Jason LaRue in the head in that thing. And that's a 7-game suspension for starting pitcher. So in effect, one start for that. This year, Ian Kennedy was throwing at Zach Greinke's head after an explicit warning had been laid down by the umpire, and that was 10 games. So, in effect, 2 starts. And normally when you get the pitcher who is going to hit someone after they've been warned, typically 5 games, which is, again, one game.
One start for starting
so,
pitchers.
Like, let's take this Machado 5-game suspension. Baseball is a 162-game season, so in effect it's about 1/32nd of the year.
Ooh.
Good math.
I said approximately again. I don't want to go into the decimals.
You looked that up before we came in here.
No, I just mental mathed it, bud.
Yeah, right, I'm impressed.
Me and my arithmetic. Anyway, so if you think about football, for instance, a guy gets caught smoking marijuana and he's out 4 games. So that's a quarter of the season.
Of the year. Yep.
And then a guy throws a dangerous weapon-like object at another player, and it's like, ooh, you know, that's like, we'll make that 1/32nd of the season. Mm-hmm. Like, that's 1/8 the degree of severity on the suspension. So it's kind of insane because people think of baseball as a sort of non-contact sport, but a lot of really nuts things happen in baseball when it comes to the hit-by-pitch and the bench-clearing brawls. I mean, it's everyone's favorite on SportsCenter, like top 10 bench-clearing brawls.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're great.
Well, I mean, are they great, though, Brett?
Great to watch.
One interesting thing about the Machado thing, too, is, I mean, last year he was a great player. Mm-hmm. Did he lead the AL in doubles? He was amongst the league leaders in doubles.
Defensively, too.
Unbelievable defensively. And now he's struggled. And I was reading a report yesterday that was saying the team might actually consider sending him down.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing that you really don't. Again, the kid's 21. So the idea of a 21-year-old kid in AAA is not the end of the world by any means. But yeah, like, I don't know, not everyone here, not all of our legion of listeners are our advanced stats guy, but Manny Machado.
The Pineheads, as we call them.
Manny Machado was 10th in the MLB in WAR last year. So in theory, like, a top 10 position player in the entire league. Right now he's hitting .222 with 4 home runs. Eesh. Through about a quarter of the season, on base under 300, 275 right now, ground ball percentage 55. Just beating the ball into the ground and just not getting hit. So, again, you don't want to make these links and assume that it's a cause and effect thing, but this guy's a young guy. He's shown himself to be immature at this incident. He was really struggling, and you have to wonder how much that had an effect on this happening. And now that this has happened, it does sort of give them an excuse to send him down if that's what they feel are the right thing to do. I'd still be surprised. I would be very surprised if that winds up happening. Baltimore is in the chase and, in theory, is one of their very, very best players.
Well, he was expected to be, like, a key part. And even just the fact that it was brought up and that, you know, the question was asked is, you know, eye-opening.
It's pretty unbelievable.
I really think this suspension could actually be really good for Manny Machado and the Orioles. In the sense that, like you just said with the numbers, obviously he's been struggling. He's been struggling very bad this year. You know, his knee could have something to do with that. That's always a possibility, obviously. But, you know, 5 games off, so, you know, 5 days off. I think if he got the 10-game suspension or something more, it could have been even better for him. Just on the fact that, you know, he has some days off, clear his head. maybe he needs to work on some stuff, you know, some extra time at the hitting coach. I don't know. I'm thinking he can't come back and be much worse, right? You're thinking he should, theoretically, from the numbers he put up last year, he should begin to, you know, to find his groove at some point soon this year. So maybe this break could be a good thing for Manny.
Yeah, and I think with problems like that, sports fans in general are kind of they have a very short memory with that kind of thing. So I think a lot of it will speak, and a lot of it will speak to his character if he can come back and, you know, completely change everything and kind of make us forget about this whole thing. And if he, you know, doesn't let this personality issue, you know, interfere with how he plays, then, you know, that's a sign of maturity and something good for the Orioles. Well, that was a personal instance in Manny Machado's life, and he'll have a lot of time to, a little personal time. And we like to do a little thing down here at the Ride in the Pine podcast where we like to get personal with someone from our panel. So this next segment's called Getting Personal, and it's with our little ginger over here, Simon Douglas.
What's going on, guys?
So from what I've heard and what I've noticed is that you're not a huge fan of, you know, toasted bread when you go for a sandwich.
Sure.
At a specific place that has the slogan, toasty, when you toast the bread.
I mean, that was Quiznos, first off. Toasty's Quiznos.
Oh, it is.
But that's okay. I get a lot of guff from my fellow Riding the Piners about my Subway habits, and I'm going to kind of take you into my world a little bit, let you know my feelings on Subway. For instance, myself and Nicky Ashbourne last night went to Subway. Sub of the day on Tuesday, of course. We
Subway
all know.
Subway melt,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
So naturally, what you're expecting is, you know, maybe you'd melt that.
It's part of the sandwich.
I am so against toasted Subway subs. I want no part of them. First off, they put them in that little convection oven. Half the time, the bread gets way too toasted. Like, I don't want to be risking the cut the roof of the mouth. Want no part of that. Secondly, and I am so sure on this, I feel like it negates the flavor of the sauce. I don't know what it is, but the toasted bread somehow
interesting
co-mingles with the sauce and negates it. I'm huge on that Chipotle Southwest sauce.
Yep.
I mean, that stuff is good.
Yep.
And if you're putting that on a toasted sub, you are wasting some of that sauce. Boom.
Dropping the mic.
My one rebuttal to that would just be three words, which would be dat cheese, though.
Oh.
Toasted cheese is great, no doubt. But, you know, not toasted cheese is also pretty darn good. So I'm not losing out much on the cheese front there.
A lot of cheese content still on Riding the Pine.
I see a staple.
One thing we will. Yeah, exactly. all right. Moving on to the fourth and final quarter. This is there's some big event going on down in Brazil this week, starting this week. Exactly. Break out your whatever the new Vuvuzela is, and, you know, break out your jersey that's been hiding in that closet for 4 years. It's time to start supporting a team that your grandparents may have come from. So the World Cup, obviously. We got some very amateur predictions coming at you. We'll pick a dark horse and, you know, just some news items surrounding the whole thing.
It's coming up tomorrow. We figured we should probably touch on it. It's a big deal.
Yeah, and just to preface this whole thing, none of us are really the biggest football guys, but, you know, we hold our own, and maybe one day we'll have a specialist on or something to talk a little bit about it, but probably not. let's start with Mr. Bone. Any predictions? Do we want a winner, a dark horse? Why don't you give us both?
Okay, well, I'm going to start with my dark horse.
Why don't we do that all around?
Okay. There's a little bit of bias in this dark horse, but I don't really care. I live in Greek town. My landlord is Greek. And in our stats class, I have been researching everything about Greece for the last, you know, 2 months or so.
So Bosnia.
So my dark horse is... exactly. No, my dark horse is Greece. Basically, really, really boring team to watch. Everybody knows that. Extremely defensive. They have two really great defenders whose names are slipping me right now, so I'm going to move on. But basically, the key for them is going to be timely goals. You know, I could see Greece 1-0 games, you know, 0-0 draws. They have a pretty even group where, you know, predictors can see them coming out of it. It involves Japan, Ivory Coast, and Colombia, who's missing their best player, Falcao. Or if he does play, he won't be anywhere near 100%. So really for Greece, you know, their defense isn't the problem. It's their offense that, you know, needs to be worried about. They have Kostas Mitroglou, who's their
That's
big...
a name.
Yeah, Kostas Mitroglou. Hope I'm saying that right. he's their big guy up front. So, you know, theoretically, Greece will go as far as Mitroglou, you know, will take them offensively. So there it is. Team Greece.
Dark horse. Like it. Ashbourne, what's your dark horse?
All right. So for my dark horse, I'd say it's not just based on my landlord, who believe is Korean, but don't see them going very far. So I'm going to go with Switzerland, and it's another incredibly boring team to watch. Don't tune into their games. Legendarily unable to score. But they've got a goaltender in Diego Benaglio, who's very solid. He's won a Bundesliga title. Jan Zomer, their second goaltender, is another quality keeper. And then in the midfield, they've got guys like Gökhan Inler and Tranquilo Barneta. Very responsible defensive team. And they're breaking in a lot of young guys. And so they up That's front, big. They've got a promising striker by the name of Josip Dermić. Did I get the end of that? Dermić? Anyway.
you tell us.
No, that is correct. And this is a guy who's like 21, 22 years old, and he already has 3 goals and 7 caps for Switzerland. So they've got some young strikers. If any of them come through, the team is rock solid defensively. So if they just find some scoring basically from anywhere, I think they can win some games. This is a team ranked like number 8 in the world right now. Yeah, no one's talking about it. No one is talking about them. Yeah. So it's kind of, maybe it's a cheap dark horse, but you know, that's my dark horse. If it wasn't Switzerland, it would have been Cameroon, but I'm not going to elaborate on that.
Let's see it.
Okay, my dark horse is probably even a bigger cheat than Nick's dark horse. My dark horse is Belgium. They are, like, you know, probably the most popular dark horse amongst all the experts. They are in a pretty weak group with Algeria, Russia, and South Korea.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think they're one of the youngest teams coming to the World Cup, which, you know, can be good and bad, but they've just got talent at all 3 phases. They've got a goalie in Courtois, who was just part of that Atletico Madrid run and who was great. They've got, you know, talent in the back end and a guy like Kompany, who's, you know, is a stalwart for Manchester City. And at midfield, they've got Axel Witsel, who plays for Zenit St. Petersburg, who's a great player. They've got Eden Hazard, obviously, who stars for Chelsea, and I feel like this could break him out on the world stage even more than he already has. And then they've got a striker that I just love in Lukaku, who, you know, is part of Chelsea. I believe he was on loan at Everton. And he's just a beast in the middle. He reminds me so much of Didier Drogba, just a really strong guy in the middle of the pitch. They're going to be exciting, unlike Bone and Ashbourne's picks there. I feel like they're going to score goals. They open the tournament up against Algeria, which, you know, if you can get that win, which you should, and get 3 points on the board right away.
Confidence booster.
Exactly. So I think Belgium's going to be awesome. I think they're going to be fun. Eden Hazard is dope. Belgium.
Okay, so I was tossing up a few here. When you said Greece, I had to look at that group. And from that group, I think, you know, if you come out of that group, you have a pretty enviable position if you win. And I think Colombia is looking pretty good in that group as well. So, I you know.
Just
and I'm
Falcao.
Not,
with Falcao, that hurts them.
Yeah, that does hurt them. And it doesn't know, like, you don't really know what you're going to do. But as you said, like, the rest of the group isn't that strong.
No.
Yeah. So, no. I mean, I'm not going to go and jump on that. The original team I was going to say, though, was Croatia. And they'll be starring in the first match, which takes place tomorrow against Brazil. That big sea turtle that's been predicting things so far predicted Brazil. I'm going to predict it's a little closer than that sea turtle thinks. You know, there's a bunch of guys on there like Luka Modric, Ivan Rakitic, and Mario Mandzukic. Well, great last name ending, by the way. All the great suffixes of Croatian last names. I feel like Mario Mandzukic right now, he's planning on leaving Bayern, and he's trying to put, you know, Arsenal and Chelsea on watch. He's always been a really good scorer. I think this might just be his stage to shine. I am going to go and I'm going to go and call that Croatia's going to make this a lot closer than you think in that first game.
Okay, so you think they're still going to lose, but it'll be a tight battle, or you think they might even pull a draw out?
I'm going to go and say draw.
Ooh, love
yeah.
the call.
I'm going to go with a 1-1.
Love it.
All right.
All right. And so picks to win it all, just one word real quick.
Literally one word?
Yeah, one word, one country.
Argentina.
Deutschland.
Ooh.
Whoa.
Me?
I'm going to double up on Argentina.
I'm going to triple up in Argentina. I'm going wow. Argentina too.
I think Scoop said
that's
it the
a surprising.
Mine was terrible.
That's a surprising amount of consensus, yeah, considering
weird.
How many real contenders there are.
That's yeah. weird.
Yeah. Well, that seems like we almost have everything, but there's always one little thing that we need to leave to the end. For the most unpopular opinion on the table, we go to Bold Claim, which is, if you didn't listen last week, is a segment where one contributor, probably Brett most times, is allowed to make a bold prediction about something in sports without any rebuttal or explanation needed from the three of us. This section, however, we get one word. All we get to say is one word back to him. But here's a bold claim from Mr. Brett Bone.
I can't wait. Last
Bring
last
the mic nice
great.
And close here so everyone can hear me. When the Kings win the cup, Jonathan Quick will get even more wasted than he did 2 years ago. Boom.
Any response?
Mine's a hyphenated word. It's
okay.
Love it.
All right.
Love hyphen it.
Jonathan Quick was very wasted 2 years ago when he won the cup, by the way, for those who don't know. You should know that, though.
My word was going to be unfathomable. Unfathomable.
Are you drunk?
not yet, buddy.
I'm just going to say yes.
All
right. Thank you very much. That was the Ride in the Pine podcast, episode 2. You can catch them on Centennial On Demand and maybe one of our Facebook pages if we ever decide to post it. Thank you very much. I'm glad you listened. And that's all she wrote.